All right, can everybody hear me? It's good. I see nodding faces. Welcome to this early morning talk. I do know they still serve breakfast, so I really appreciate so many people showing up. My name is Johannes. I'm a software development engineer. I work in a team. We call ourselves the Monaco team. We're based in Switzerland, in Zurich, so it does make sense we're called Monaco. Today's talk is about large-scale JavaScript applications, and one specific one which we have built over the last 3 years. Just to like drop a little bit of information on our team. So this team is spawning around Eric Gammer, and he got hired by Microsoft around 3 years ago. And then, like every once in a while, like more people joined, and then we ended up with a team of about 9 people. And the mission was to build tools that developers can use inside a browser. So like code editing, language servicing, you know, IntelliSense, compilation, file management, all these things in the browser. Just see how far you get. Like building a large scale application, the first question is, what application do we actually do? And so this is our marketing slide. So we are out on a mission to build a modern web standards based, so this is important and this is new. Developer tools, a platform and cloud services. So we really try to leverage the browsers because, as everybody knows, in the last years, browsers have just become so much more powerful. JavaScript happened to have like this explosive growth in performance with new JavaScript engines, and the whole HTML5 revolution just made so many things possible that you couldn't do even 5 years ago. This is a new, happy, fancy playground where you can do and try out things. Let me just show you a few things that we have done, and then I'll show you what we do. So this talk is a little bit of storytelling. So we have been working on it for years. It's a large project, around 200,000 lines of code, plus the same amount of tests. So you run into many issues, you know, like how do you load this into a browser, how do you manage all this source code? And I would really like you guys to ask questions and interact, and because there's a lot of stories to tell that I might not remember, but if you poke me, if you give me the right trigger, I can tell a good story about things. The first thing that I want to show, this is what you're seeing here, is Visual Studio Online. So they do have a web client, which is pretty rich. You can, you know, you can do your planning, you can manage your work items, you can, you know, manage your builds. And also what you can do, you can manage your source control, so you can see what commits have been done to a source stream. You can really drill into a commit, and actually you can drill down into the file level diff of what files have been, file changes have been done during an iteration. And what you see here is like someone changed a file, lineoperations.ts, and you see the file is being rendered side by side. So you do see syntax highlighting, you know, the basic stuff every code editor should give you. But you also see diffing. So you see a word level and a line level diff between the left-hand side and the right-hand side. And traditionally, how this would have been done is you check out these two revisions on your server, and then you run a diff algorithm, which is computationally expensive because you have to compare all these characters. Then you sort of like pre-render this on the server, which means like you generate a bunch of HTML, and then you just send it down to the browser, and then basically what you do, you use the browser as a canvas just to render what your server has already computed, which means like, you don't trust your browser, that you don't trust it that it's powerful, and you use a lot of resources on your server, which you have to pay for. So what this does is, this is actually just sending two files from the server, like the original and the modified sources, and everything else we do in the browser, which is very easy. Like this is a very, very, like, the browser is not even starting to sweat on this. Another thing where we could partner up, and like I'm saying partner up because even though we are inside Microsoft, which is like this insanely big company, we're only like 9 people, and we sit as a satellite in Zurich. We have a lot of conf calls. It's a good collaboration, but we saw ourselves as a startup that is trying to sell our innovations to other teams inside Microsoft. And so this is how we roll. So we don't want to do something just for the sake of innovating. We actually want to bring something out. Oh, sorry, this question. I just demo it live, and then you can see it, yeah. Thank you. We see ourselves as a startup inside Microsoft, and we are trying to sell our components that we do to other teams. So the first you saw is already TFS Online. This is what you can see here, and I will just demo it live. I have to switch the screens. Off to 8. Yes, so this is Internet Explorer 11. What I've done here, I just hit F12, and then these developer tools show up. And this editor in here, this was done by our team. So we successfully managed to convince the F12 people that this is a good editor, this is an editor they should use. And actually, all of this, like all of this new developer experience, is done in TypeScript. And we could contribute parts to this. The challenge in this is, like, this is locally installed, so it runs fast. It's still JavaScript, and you can see, like, this is line one, and this is an insanely long line. So, like, the challenge is that you really render these long lines, virtualize a view, not only like this, but only in the other direction. So it was a nice task how to do a proper client. Next thing up is changing screens. Sorry, I might forget this. Next thing up is our premium partner, TypeScript. TypeScript started almost the same time we started, so we do have a close collaboration with the TypeScript people. And when they wanted to ship and go public, we gave them a playground, which I think most people have used already. I don't know, a quick poll. Who has used TypeScript? That's a few. Who has used JavaScript? All right, that's a lot better. Yeah, okay. Like, I will try to convince you to use more TypeScript. That's sort of like mission of this talk. So we provide this playground for TypeScript, and people who have seen it already, I will demo it in a bit. What you do, you type TypeScript code on the left-hand side. It spits out JavaScript code on the right-hand side. It might look the same, then the TypeScript is good. It might look slightly different, but this is how things are. But actually, this playground is a lot more than just transpiling. It's a tiny IDE, so it allows you to rename things, to search for references, to go to declaration, to jump back and forth into your code. So this is a lot more than most people actually think. And for those who haven't done a lot of TypeScript, I will do a bit of TypeScript demos then for you guys so you see what this is all about. Another thing, WinJS, like this awesome JavaScript library that was shipped with Windows 8, it recently announced cross-platform support and also will be open source. So we could also staff them with a playground. And this playground is more than just showing code, as you can see here. So this is their pattern, right? They say, like, oh, I have a bit of JavaScript, I have a bit of CSS, a bit of HTML. And then you see funny things, right? So this is the widget library that you can use. And so this is already pretty cool, right? You can see how this is being built. You see there's, like, some data structures and, like, some things going on. But actually, if you want to go in, you could just go in and say, oh, WinJS, and it will autocomplete. This is, I think, a lot cooler than reading API. You just try it out yourself, and, you get comments in this. You can drill really into things. And so, yeah, we're very very proud, a proud startup that we could sell this to them. Another thing where we managed to sneak in is OneDrive, which you will see when I press this button. OneDrive allows you, since end of last year, to edit text files that are in your OneDrive when you're online. So this is the first time we really reached out to a large audience. This is not only developers. Like, my girlfriend's mom could use this. So it's a large audience. And when you target something like this, you hit a lot of files that are all weird, like weird line endings, weird encodings, all these things that we had to deal with. And last but not least, this is sort of like our premium thing. Last November, we did ship a mini IDE that runs inside a browser. You will see a lot more about this. So, like, all my demos, I will try to do in there, just to promote it a little bit. And so what this is it does offer you language services for TypeScript, for JavaScript, for less CSS, SAS, all the cool new things people use in web development. It does support basic language services for, like, many languages, 30-plus languages. And we build this as a companion to VS that runs inside Windows Azure website. So if you have an Azure website, you just have to press a button, and then this thing shows up, and you can edit it. As I said, browsers become more popular, and browsers become more powerful. So you could just offload more work to them, and you can have smaller servers. So like how we implemented it, and like this is, I'm not saying you guys are supposed to do this, but we do JavaScript end-to-end. So we have a Node.js server, and of course a lot of JavaScript in the front end. and how it looks like 90% of our code runs in the browser and only 10% of the code runs in the server. It's a very small server, basically just serves files and resources to us. And the client can just, you know, it can handle it. And we can handle a lot, so we can easily compile all the TypeScript files that we have, like 200,000 lines of TypeScript, we can compile in the browser, and it will not, you know, like, it just does it. Like, Hanselman has described this shift as, you know, from angle brackets to curly brackets. So, like, in the 90s, what you would have a fat server that has a lot of state. You know, you log in, it keeps a session for you, keeps all your models around on the server, and when you request a website, it has angle bracket things like, you know, PHP, JSP, Razor, which is all like angle bracket HTML content, and then some weird patterns that you can replace based on the current state. And it would generate this thing, hand it off to the client, which is then 10%, and do this. Now we turn this around, which has a lot of positive characteristics. So it's very easy to implement a server, and like, you know, you want to be correct when you implement a server. So if you have to do less work, that's better. We don't keep any state on the server. That means you can scale out the server very well. There's no, you know, session and state being kept around. You cannot, you know, you cannot scale up because this user and this other heavy user is on the same machine. So that is very easy. And of course, if you run a server that is very computationally expensive, you can buy that off Azure, but it still costs money. So like every computer has, like even phones have quad core CPUs. You know, let them do the work and not your server. And of course, this gives you a nice experience because if you have all the models already in the browser, you don't have to ask the server like for model update. Hey, user clicked here. What should I do next? The browser already knows. So this is very exciting times. It's very good to start off with something fresh. And I'm glad to work in this thing. And so this is the actual roadmap. The roadmap to Monaco, this is how we started. A bunch of JavaScript lovers and how we grew in size, what patterns we used to, you know, like to handle this sheer amount of code. And you can see how more and more TypeScript sneaked in. So in the beginning, we were a little bit skeptical because TypeScript was very fresh. Basically what you could do, you could compile. There was no language service with IntelliSense. So, sorry, there was a question? Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. So in the beginning, we just had a compiler, and the compiler would crash all the time. So like very, very few lines of TypeScript code we had in. And we had the editor and a bit of model logic. So we were around 50,000 lines of JavaScript code. And we do enjoy programming JavaScript, but we did have some concerns because it just happens to be that JavaScript was not really designed to, you know, like to power through 100,000 lines of code because it just misses some of the concepts we as engineers are very much used to. There's no classes, there's no modules, there's no interfaces, you cannot define types or anything. So I have this picture, I have these two books at home. So one book is JavaScript, The Definite Guide. It's around 1,000 pages, it's a good book. Then there's a book, JavaScript, The Good Parts. It's around 100 pages. And 50 of those pages are just saying, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. I'm not making this up. I think there's common consensus that JavaScript has issues. Which is fair because it was not intended, to be used in such a way. It does also have a lot of positive, characteristics. JavaScript and Java, they share the same name, but they are more like ham and hamster. But what is actually true is, Java came out like 20 years ago with this promise: yeah, you write it once and you run it everywhere. But they could actually not fulfill this promise. And what happened, somehow sneaky JavaScript came into place, and JavaScript runs everywhere. Like, you have browsers that support it, like browsers on every platform that support it, you have phones that support it, you have just headless JavaScript VMs that support it. Like, JavaScript just happened. Like, no one really saw it, no one really pushed for it, but it just happened, it's everywhere. And especially if you do JavaScript in a browser, there's many nice characteristics because a browser is a very nice programming environment because you do UI with HTML and CSS, which is just very nice. Most people know this. If you hire a guy, he will know a bit of CSS and HTML. And you can bring it up to speed very quickly. And then there's all these awesome development tools. You just hit F12, and you have like all these DOM explorers. You can live manipulate your UI, which is like you have the state of your running program. You can manipulate it and then just sync back the changes into your sources, which is very, very awesome. So like, there's a lot of positive things. Also, like this whole HTML5 movement, there's like so many cool APIs being added to browsers. You can use your webcam, you can do peer-to-peer connections to other computers and do chat. You know, like you can do a chat client peer-to-peer in 100 lines of JavaScript code. Like, I want to see that doing someone in C. So things become a lot more easy with these things. You've got databases, you've got offline support, all these things. It's a really awesome application development environment. Yeah, and of course, like you're always connected to the internet most of the time, so you always have a good connection. And like there's zero install, there's zero update cost. The server just hands it out and then the client does it, which is like definitely a good trend. And like I think most applications that we use nowadays go to this trend. Like some like stuff like Facebook and you know Maps applications and mail. There's nothing you want to install. Like no one asked me ever how do I install Facebook, right? You go to a web page and then it downloads an app for you dynamically. Well, there's some bad sides about JavaScript. So JavaScript has no types. It has types at runtime, but it does not have types at coding time. So you cannot really know what you're programming against. So if you work on your own, that's fine. If you have a good memory, that's fine. If you're good in spelling and memorizing, that is fine. But as soon as you hand out code to someone else, it becomes very cumbersome. And then things like this happen. So like people try to document what their intent is. And so then like, so this is how jQuery people think it's good. Like you go through and it's like, oh, yeah, okay, there's a type name, which is already good. Like jQuery is an awesome library. It's just very hard to learn it, right? It's very hard to really be precise. What is this type? Do I really trust my code? Node.js also, awesome library, awesome tool. But also they're, you know, like they use a totally different scheme of documenting their API. So it's very hard. You know, like once you get your head around jQuery, then you have to like reset your mind to the state, and you know, like have to understand how the Node.js people document these things. The same is true like for Angular. I could go on for hours, right? Everyone does an awesome job, but it's not aligned. Everyone does it slightly differently, so, which means for us as developers, we have to really, really like know all these things, know what this means in this context, and all these things. So it's like a lot of waste in brain cycles. So then there's the other thing with JavaScript. I'm pulling up Chrome with the F12 developer tools here. JavaScript is a scripting language, so that means it's just live, right? So this is pretty cool. Like I just type in 3 + 5 and it's 8. And we all had maths, so 5 + 3 is also 8. And JavaScript knows this, so it cannot be so bad. But JavaScript has this weird semantics of like auto unboxing casting types. So if I take an empty object, which is like this is the notion of an empty object, and I add an empty array to it, I get the number 0, which maybe makes sense. So if I turn this around, as I did it with 3 and 5, I get a string, which is reads object object, which is already a little bit more confusing. So one of these, you know, like one of these components must call strings, and one of these must call numbers. So if I take an empty array plus an empty array, it is the empty string, of course. If you take the empty object and add the empty object, you get not a number. Like everybody was expecting this, I know. I just wanted to make sure. So I'm not saying JavaScript is very well specified, and browsers support it very well. Like 5 years ago, when this was different. 5 years ago, you had all these if IE, you know, these special code branches. It's not a problem anymore. We have almost zero. What you do a little bit is feature poking, you know, like if navigator.geolocation, then I can do this and that. But browsers are very good these days. It's just like JavaScript has a very error-friendly way. It just keeps on tracking on. It's like, oh, you gave me an object. Oh, try what I can do with an object. Oh, maybe I do it in a string. Yeah, oh, let's see what I can do with a string, right? So it just keeps on powering on. Which is interesting for a scripting language, has good characteristics. But for a developer where you're like in this fail fast mode, I want to see if my code is good or not. This is very bad because, you know, like this not a number might in the end come out as a Boolean again, and then you don't even see that there's something wrong with your code. You're just lucky that it works. And then you change one thing and, you know, the world is falling apart. So this is funny samples, but like a serious example is more like you take code like this. I paste it here so you can see it nicer. So I wanna write some code that if I click on my window, I wanted to output the X coordinate of where my mouse was when I clicked. So I do it like this. So there's this on click handle, and then I, you know, register a function to it. And the console log just prints to this window here. So press enter, and it doesn't work, right? Of course, it doesn't work. Why should it? I didn't get an error. Why should I? I have to figure it out by myself. So what's actually what's going wrong here, like all these events are actually all lowercase. There's no Camel or Pascal casing here. So if I do it now, like things are, oh, no, I actually clicked something. I have to re-register it. You know, like now things actually, like now it works. So it is very hard because it is so forgiving. It never gives you feedback of, hey, you're doing something wrong, you should improve in this direction. It's just like, hey, you're fine, I don't care. It's not a good friend in this respect. Because, you know, as a programmer, you want to see your errors very quickly. Let me get back to my slides. So we saw this. There's good parts, there's bad parts. I would say the good parts still overweigh the bad parts, otherwise it would have not been adopted so widely. But we did have our concerns. So if you have a lot of code, it's very hard to organize a large body of code. Because basically all that JavaScript gives you is functions. So we are sort of loose to things like classes, interfaces, you know, they sort of have proven to be useful, object-oriented programming. You come up with compensating patterns that sort of like try to resemble how a class could look in JavaScript. So you want to have your instance off-check, all these things, like all the things that we learned how to program. Once you have all of that in place, like you don't have to use TypeScript for this. You can use JDojo or WinJS. There's like a ton of libraries that enable you to do this. Once you have that in code, it's like your code is read-only. Like, don't ever try to change it. Like, you write your code, and you have no clue who's depending on this field or on this reference, or like who's expecting this return type to be a Boolean and not an integer or something. Right? So we came up with these quotes that you know, like your JavaScript code is rotting. We call it bit rotting because you know, like you go on vacation for 5 days and your code stopped working because someone changed something on the other side of the system, which had like this giant ripple. It just breaks. And yeah, like the famous quote is like, especially if you try to do API, it's like carving your code into stone, right? You only have one try. And this is not what they meant with write once, right? Write once, you should still be able to refactor your stuff because otherwise it's just useless. And like, I think no one just goes in and says like, yeah, my code is just perfect. I write it and it will work. So you want to have like a faster cycle. Also, because of this dynamic nature and lack of things, it's very hard for people like us to build tools for it. We can do a syntactical analysis. I can tell you, yeah, there's a bracket missing, but I cannot tell you, hey, you're using something which is supposed to be a number, and you use it like a regular expression. This is very hard to infer if you don't have type information. And then there's like the thing, yeah, you want to describe APIs. I show you all the documentation. You can write docs, but like in my team or our team, like the baseline is, the code is the best documentation, because if you write documentation, you have to write it. So like you just write what's there already. You know, like someone that doesn't read code cannot also not read documentation. Being from Switzerland, you have to bring in a picture of a Swiss Army knife. For the good of JavaScript, there's like JavaScript is a good language. Like the Swiss Army knife is an awesome tool. I like mountaineering. I like cheese, so I have a Swiss Army knife. You know, I eat a slice of cheese sometimes. So this is a good tool, but if I go to my dentist, I don't want to see that tool in his hand, right? So like every job requires a very specific tool. And JavaScript has all its use cases, but as soon as you go large scale development, you will have problems. And this is where the rescue came, right? TypeScript to the rescue. TypeScript is a language for large scale JavaScript development. It's not meant to make your code run faster. It's, you know, like, it doesn't add anything to a VM. It would just like compile down to JavaScript. TypeScript just disappears. Its sole purpose is to make programming faster, not program execution faster. It's like it's an engineering tool, which is often forgotten. If you think of tools in like software engineering, you think of IDEs and unit tests and source control management. But like the best tool, the first level tool, is your programming language, because that is the thing. That is the first abstraction to this computer, because we're not doing assembly anymore. So like TypeScript is exactly this. It's meant to be an engineering tool for you. So, what are the positive sentiments? There's only a just a little bit. There's many ways. There's many people in this field, right? This is a very active field. Many people try to solve this problem with JavaScript, and basically, there's three approaches what you can do. So the first approach is you come up with a new language, and you come up with a new runtime. So this is Flash is this, Java is doing this. We did this with Silverlight. Dart is doing this. Basically, you say, I just don't use anything of the browser, maybe a bit of rendering, but I don't use the JavaScript VM. Definitely worked for a long time, but the thing is, it seems to be hard for people to update these VMs. So there's a Java bug and then it doesn't work. It's very hard to keep them all in the same version. So this turned out not to be the best idea. There's a second approach what's being taken. You do a new language, which is totally different from JavaScript, but it compiles down to JavaScript. It uses the JavaScript sort of runtime. Or even better, you take an existing language. For instance, there's script sharp. You write C sharp and it just compiles down to JavaScript. There's GWT from Google. You write Java and it compiles down to JavaScript. They have proven to be successful. The problem with them is often the code they generate is very bulky. So for instance, if you program Java and compile it down to JavaScript, it will bring in all this Java lang crap. So you write a one-liner, you write a hello world, and it brings in 5,000 lines of Java lang collections and all these things. So not a good idea. And then there's the third approach, the novel approach, which TypeScript goes. And TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript. So all of you who raised their hands were doing JavaScript, actually you do TypeScript. You just don't know yet. Because it is a superset. Any valid JavaScript application is already a TypeScript application. To make it actually TypeScripty, you copy it into a TypeScript file, or you just change the ending, and then you get all the tool support. So this is a good thing. Because it provides you a very easy migration path. Also, that means all the libraries that you already use, all the cool JavaScript libraries that are around, Angular and Knockout and JDojo, they just work. You can use them as they are, or you can actually bring in typings for them. Talking about typings, there's a lot of talk about typings, and people are reluctant. They say, I don't want to have types in my code. That makes it ugly. I'm smart enough to figure this out. So TypeScript is not a binary flip. It's it provides you a dial. You can dial in more types as you go. So for instance, you can say, I declare my functions, my function signatures with type, but inside my function body, I don't use any type at all because this is private to me. It's just a signature that's important. So definitely it gives you a dial. Sooner or later, you will dial it up to 11, believe me. So what this does, just by providing you a few types, it allows you to have your application development model. It just scales better because with JavaScript in the beginning you're fast and then you just start crawling because you're too afraid to make changes. You're always in full text search to try to find, where's this field ID used everywhere, all these things. So this is actually this enables excellent tooling, and it disappears at runtime. So there's nothing special. You don't need a Chrome extension to run TypeScript. TypeScript just disappears at runtime, which is a good thing. So, and also, what it compiles down to is a very idiomatic JavaScript. So if you would not use TypeScript and write JavaScript using classes and all these things, you would very likely write code like this. And of course, it runs any browser, any host, any OS. There's nothing, it's not Microsoft specific or anything, right? So it is a good thing. Let me demo a bit of TypeScript. Press the button 8. All right. So what do we have here? So this is the TypeScript playground. Let me try to make this a little bigger. This is what I have shown before. So everybody should go there and just play with stuff because this is a good showcase for what TypeScript is, what you can do with TypeScript, and it's also a good showcase for Monaco, what you can do in the browser. Because everything that I will demo now happens in the browser. There's zero server on trips. So what we have here, this is pretty plain JavaScript. You have a function, and you have one of these flaky this pointers, which is not yet decided what it is. You use it as a constructor, which you can tell because the function name is uppercase, which is convention. If a function is an uppercase character, then it should be used as a constructor, which we actually do here. It expects something, and it assigns it to something. And we seem to use this greeting as a string because we concatenate it to another string. So if I go ahead and say, like, yeah, well, then I will enforce people to actually provide a string when this is being constructed. So I put a type annotation, and it's the colon and then type name syntax that we use here. And you see immediately it popped up a compile error because what I actually did here, I'm invoking this function not with a string but with a hash object, which has a message word. So I do understand this is 17 lines of code, and probably you can manage this in your hand and writing it correctly. But if you have, you know, like 17,000 lines of code, things like this, these become an issue. So what you can do, you can either say, yeah, I make this a string here, or you just say, okay, I actually want this complex object, and you can just type an object in place. You can say, oh, this greeting thing that I pass in will have a field message, which is of type string. And then in here, I get IntelliSense, you know, like, I only had to put in this one little type annotation, and I already have confidence that this thing is called correctly, and I can also use IntelliSense, and I say, oh, this greeting has a member called message, and this is of type string. So I could just keep on checking, right? I can say, like, oh, like, and now I know this is a string, so I can propose what a string member, what members a string has. So this is pretty awesome. All right, let me actually keep this. And you see all of this runs on the browser, right? If I mistype message, the browser will actually tell me the IDE that there's something missing. Because usually with JavaScript, you're really at the mercy of your ability to spell. If you're not a good speller, you're not a good JavaScript programmer. It's just a matter of fact. And like, there's so many weird words, especially for like someone like me who's foreign language, you know, like where you just flip characters around and you're like, oh, God damn it, again. So JavaScript is just great. It's like it's a good, you know, like just see it as a spelling checker. So obviously this greeter thing, like I will dive a bit more into TypeScript. Sorry for those people who already know everything about TypeScript. Like this is obviously like a class pattern. Like this is how people use classes. You know, like you put things onto a prototype. What you can do in TypeScript, you just say class greeter, and obviously you wanted to use that as a constructor. So you say greeting. I will make this a string, and this one I will just remove. And then I say, what did we have? We had a method greet, huh? This one does return a string, and then we say, see, I'm not a good speller, so this is why I need, all right, this is why we need TypeScript. So just bear with me 1 second. I'll explain to you what I'm doing here right now. All right, so hello thing. And yeah, we can give this a complex type again, huh? All right, so now we have still an error. So now we basically have something which we had before. Like we still express the same intent. It just looks more like what we actually wanted. Oops. You know, like we do want it to have like this class semantic, like the nice encapsulation a class gives me, and now this is actually in the sort of shape that we like to have it. I have used here a private keyword, so you know, like if I go on this greeter, like the greeting does not show up because it's private. I can change this to public, and then it actually shows up. So you can control, like you can control the public shape of your classes, which is pretty awesome because, like, in JavaScript, even though you say you have all these conventions in JavaScript, it's like, oh, something starts with an underscore, it's private. Like people don't give, like they don't give, yeah, they don't care. And they would just, oh, I can use this field, makes my life a little bit easier. I just use that. So it's good that the TypeScript, you know, like enforces this sort of cleaner programming model. So like what TypeScript has as well is interfaces, and I will talk about interfaces a bit. One more thing I wanted to direct your attention to is you see while I change code on the left hand side, it updates on the right hand side, right? It's pretty instantaneous. This happens in the browser, and this is actually you know like you see sort of the code that TypeScript spits out as JavaScript. And you see there's not much of a difference. So the class pattern, you know, it's made in this weird, you know, like this is how you do classes in JavaScript. You have all these prototype dans and you wrap it around, you know, like do not escape it. And the rest is basically, it's basically the one way on copy, right? So who says it's complicated to do a TypeScript transpiler? Just copy the code, huh? So this is the thing, but like I want to tell you the story how we actually got hooked, like which made us, what made us buy in, because we had code and we, so like after 5 years of learning JavaScript, we were like, no, we'll not change to a compiles to a language. I know master JavaScript. And so we were a little bit reluctant, and like how we got convinced is like, so this is our Monaco IDE, and we have many language services. Like we support all these coloring. So we call a language service like the whole thing that supports the languages, and in there you have a tokenizer that, you know, like this, you know, like an attribute is colored differently than the actual value. Or if you go to something like JavaScript, you know, keywords have a different color than an identifier and a bracket, and you know, brackets match, all these things. So we have many of these modes, like some 20 plus. And our thing was, whenever we onboard someone to the team, like be it a new like engineer, kick-ass engineer, or an intern, everybody had to do one of these language services. And this is exactly the case where if you're the guy that owns the framework, you don't want to have every day someone stepping on your foot. It's like, dude, how was this again? Like, how do I have to use this? What is the thing? So to show you a bit of actual Monaco source code, this was like this I state. It did evolve, but this is sort of like the first interface that we ask people to use, right? And like you could just say, hey, if you want to be a mode, just implement this I state interface. It's, you know, like there's no comments. It's obvious. You have to provide implementation for these methods. So there's an implementation called tokenize. You go like, oh, tokenize gets a stream. What can I do on a stream? So, you know, like you can drill into it. You can say, if you're on this guy, you can say, wait, you know, show me the declaration of this one. Oh, wait, I do have a problem here. All right, I can just jump into it. You know, like I have a stream. This one actually has comments, even better. And you know, like I can use this as I, you know, like as I'm supposed to use the stream. I can advance. I can read the next character. I can peek at a character. So it was very easy to implement this interface. And this is also a good example of how interfaces in TypeScript are like different than interfaces in, I don't know, C#, for instance. So this is a classic interface I state. Like the intent is that you write a class, you know, like CSS state implements I state, and then you go on implementing these methods. But if you look at the return type of the tokenized method, it does return an I tokenization result, and there's no methods on it. There's just a few types. They're all optional. And we use an interface here just to describe a data bag, you know, like the classical JavaScript hash object, which are very common in JavaScript, you know, like this, so like, yeah, just give me a hash of something. If you initialize an object, they always ask you for a hash, which is like, you know, like you do this curly bracket thing, and then you are, when, you know, supposed to be, you know, providing the right options. And with TypeScript, you can actually do this in a very nice way, which is speccing this, and when you, you know, like when you want to adhere to this interface, you can just use an object literal that has these fields. So this is a very nice thing. So like given interfaces, given classes, like our life was already a lot easier because we could all do this. The next challenge is something that we call a callback hell. I'm pretty sure everybody has heard about callback hell. So for those who don't, like JavaScript is an asynchronous language, so you cannot make it stop. Like when you talk to a server, like the code will just keep on going, even though you think, do this when the server returns, it will not wait for you, it will just keep on going. So like this is a bit of code, which I think doesn't work. I just, you know, like hacked it together. So what I do here, I do an XSR request. I open it to a resource, and then like the code, how it executes, it will be on this line, it will be on this line, it will be on this line, and then it will be on this line. So all the things that I want to do when the server is ready, like will happen at a later stage. So like your code, it becomes like this indentation mess. Like you, like, you know, like you have another if statement, then you do another thing, you know, like you talk to a worker, and then you talk again to the server. So you have like 15 levels of indentation, which is very hard to manage. So we brought in this thing, which is called promises, which is pretty standard now. But I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago, which is like a little bit novel. And there's still a bit of debate. There's like people that like it, people that don't like it. You can get around callback hell with different means. Promises are not the only one. But like a promise is very, very, very nice. It basically just defines the function then. So a promise object is something. And then when the promise is fulfilled, it will call a new error call, a new callback for you. So you don't have to nest your code. You don't have to write it backwards. You just say, oh, I do something, then I do this, then I do this. I have an error handling path. And so this is a very nice pattern. And also, TypeScript provides great support for this because it actually supports generics with this. So it does know that the first promise returns an XHR request. The next promise does return a string. And this promise returns an integer. So you can really do these asynchronous code flows, and you can change the types while you go and keep all your typings along. So I would really recommend going into this. And promises will be added to JavaScript. So I believe Firefox and Chrome have already added it. I copied this from WinJS. So the WinJS promise you can find actually on the Try WinJS. It's open source. You just go download it, try it out. It's a pretty eye-opening experience once you use promises. Life becomes a lot easier. The last thing I wanted to quickly mention, tackling our problems is namespaces. So TypeScript supports something they call internal modules, which basically means you have a keyword module, you give it a name, you dot into something, and then you say, okay, I have my monaco.utils, I define a function, okay, which will throw if a value is not true. Like an assertion sort of function that you have. I also have in the same namespace, I can define a function, like a module utils, it's the same module, and there I export the empty string, which is always a good pointer to have, and a function that does format a string. So this is pretty straightforward. All of this, what I've shown now, interfaces, classes, modules, and promises, they did help us a long, long way. So we're still on the road to Monaco, and we're still in the first chunk. But all these things made our life so much easier that we could actually easily scale up to 100,000 or 100,000 plus lines, and everything was happy. The thing is, what happens next is, who knows how to load a script file into a browser? You use a script tag, right? That's the only thing to get JavaScript into a browser. You have to write a script tag that points to resource, has a data URL. The thing is, if you write a lot of code, and we're a team of mad people that like to write a lot of code, you end up with 1,000 script files, even more, 10,000, whatever. So now you have to, you can bundle them all together, but it's still a big challenge because of what I've shown you with these internal modules. They're not bound to their file. Everybody can just go into a module and just, mess with your module. So we call this the code organization challenge. So a module, I will show how a module is actually being implemented because there's no native modules in JavaScript. So what you do and what TypeScript does as well, I want to have a namespace which is called Monaco. So I just say, Monaco is the empty object. So now I have a Monaco namespace. Now I say, oh yeah, Monaco utils is my other object. This is good. And now I say in here, I have a function which is called OK. So this is how I define namespaces. But they're very open. Even just here from the developer console, I can just add stuff to my namespace. And you can imagine if I have 700 files, any file might add its methods to any namespace. There's no correlation whatsoever. So you will end up with a very messy project. Believe me this, everybody says, well, this is easy. I can manage namespaces. But whenever there's a shortcut that can be taken, people will take a shortcut. You can be the best programmer on this planet, you will take a shortcut at one point. Be it you have to fix this bug now. So due to this global variable, modules are global variables and open, people are not very disciplined. And also when you try to find something, you first look at your files, but the files don't mean anything. It could be that all the namespaces come from one file or the other way around. So it's very hard. And even worse, you will have cyclic dependencies between these things. So I can show you this too, because actually my last example, there was a cyclic dependency. So you see this, I have this format thing. This is it takes a string with the curly bracket number pattern and formats it. And I do assert that the value, that you actually give me a string, right? And so do not format an empty string, doesn't make sense. The thing is here, this assertion function, uses exactly this format message, you know, like if the assertion fails. So it's very easy. You don't even see it, right? You just say, well, they're in the same namespace. It just happened to be. But the thing is, they're in two different files. If I just happen to forget to load the one file, the other file would just fail. But it will not fail at load time. It will fail at runtime, like at arbitrary points, because who knows when this actually will actually ever fail. So you might not ever know unless this is the bug sort of that happened. Already something very bad happened to a customer. He wants to, you know, like you pop up, it's like, hey, did you have a good experience? Or an error happened, and then you press OK, and then disaster happens. Because this is like a code path no one knows, right? So yeah, this is like makes you very sad. It makes you feel very dirty and messy. Like yeah, so we have the famous quote, you know, like no names is just an ashamed developer. A dependency graph, you know, like at one point you start to think about your dependency graph and you realize it's a massive mess. And it will look like something like this, which is just disastrous, right? It's like we think we're engineers, we are actually not, we're not good engineers. This is the thing I said about script tags. Yes, you load things with a script tag. The thing is, you will have many. Okay, this is a development mode. You will concatenate and bundle them all together, but you will have many. And you will have many. Like, you will have really, really a lot. And so who knows in all of these things if, you know, like, if this memento.js goes before action.js. Like, no one knows this. Like, knowledge is just being lost. To make it worse, because you don't know this, you just load all the JavaScript files you have in one go when you open your page. Which is, yes, like all of our JavaScript code is 8 megabytes, you gzip it, it's 2.5 megabytes, it's nothing, right? It's like easy peasy. The thing is, it's not only transferring the data, you throw it at the browser, and even though like they can be lazy in parsing this JavaScript, they at least open it once to find out the signatures. They might skip the method bodies, but you still have to find all the signatures. So you will see if you profile this, a big pile of JavaScript comes in, and then you see the browser going crazy just parsing things. Yeah, so a very bad experience. You feel very weird. And also this thing is like, you're loading files that you might never ever use. So for instance, you see in this screenshot, I load CSS.js, which is like the language service for CSS. I might never open a CSS file during my whole workflow. Like, why did I load the code for it? It does not make sense. So there's a rescue. Like, life is not lost yet. So we felt this pain over a long time, and we failed it for too long because we were too lazy to actually fix it. Like the rescue is external modules. And this is nothing TypeScript came up with. Maybe they came up with the name. But the idea of an external module is you have a file and a file is a module. It's a very easy relationship. Like that's sort of the unit of code you can load into a browser or into a JavaScript VM. So a file is a module. And the module clearly has to declare the dependencies and its exports. It's so easy. You know, like this is stuff every Java or .NET developer goes like, yes, of course, it's like this. Like, what are you talking about, right? So everything I have been talking about so far is things, is like the extra mile you have to go to make JavaScript large scale fly. Let me demo a bit of things, a bit of external modules. See my screen, good. So we do have external modules, and there's basically two sort of like things how you do this. There's something which is called AMD, which is the asynchronous module definition. This is mainly used in browsers and meant to be used in browsers. And there's CommonJS, which is very popular with Node.js because that's the standard module system in Node.js, and it will ever be. So how does this look? We have our familiar assert and string thing again. So if we start with CommonJS, very simple. It's basically the same code. So this is the JavaScript code. Bear with me for a second. So it did blew up a little bit. But what I actually do, I write the same thing. I just have this special object, which is called exports. And whatever I assign to there, so I say exports.empty is like the empty string. Exports.format is this function. So like this is how I declare sort of like the outer shape. And if I have a dependency, which this guy will have, I just say I require strings.js. You skip the JS, this is like module loading magic, but you say like, oh, I require this, requires a magic function, similar to exports.js, the magic function, and you have this, and then you can just load, you can just say, oh, strings.format, and you know, like the computer will know what this is, and like the module loader will not allow you to read into the actual code and modify, screw it. So this is CommonJS, pretty straightforward. JavaScript code looks actually quite beautiful. The thing is, what you see here, this function is synchronous. We all like synchronous, which is good, because asynchronous makes things complicated. But if you do this in the browser, you must have loaded it already, which sort of like defeats the purpose of being lazy and loading the things. So this is where they came up with AMD. And let me show you AMD. So AMD is sort of this thing. Code still looks very similar. There's still like the exports dot notion, almost the same. The only thing that is different, everything is wrapped into a define call. So define is a magic function. Like exports is a magic object, requires a magic function, define is another magic function, where you put in your requirements. These are sort of like set. The exports is the exports, and requires a special function. And then you just write your JavaScript code. And if you actually want to depend on something like assert or JS, you just say, yeah, I do depend on dot strings. And it will be, you know, like in your callback, you will have all the things that you depended on will be provided in your callback. So this is very nice, right, isn't it? It's like a problem is solved. Like a module now says, I want this, and I export this. It's a very clean programming model, just in a sudden. But there's a catch, and there's a problem with this. So you have two different module types, CommonJS, AMD, and the JavaScript code that you write differs on the platform that you target, which is like, you remember this, write once, runs everywhere? Like, this is like, you know, like screws it over with API, because if you once write a module that you want to write that you want to run on Node.js, it will not run in a browser like in a nice intended way, and the other way around. So this is a bit of a problem. This is where TypeScript comes to the rescue. A very good thing. So TypeScript, you just write your modules in the same syntax, and then you just tell the compiler, hey, spit out JavaScript code that adheres to CommonJS or to AMD. I'll show you this in a second. So this is actually a real game changer, because in a scenario like the Monaco scenario, we could actually, we have like source code that we want to share. Like this is like these examples like string and assert, I did not make them up, right? There's actually true code that we use. How you do this in TypeScript, you just say, I just put an export qualifier onto these functions. So if I actually say go in here and compare those, you can see there's not much of a difference. Except okay, it did like the rest parameters is a little bit complicated, but you know the exports dot is basically just export var. This is how you do it in TypeScript, and when you then run this, this will be already good. Assert.ts just says, hey, I import strings, which is I require the string. And when you want to compile this, you just tell the compiler what you want to do. So I have practiced this. So you say, TSC is the TypeScript compiler. You tell it, hey, I want to use module CommonJS, and please compile the strings.ts. And if I go in here, then you'll see it's working. And now you see it has changed to a CommonJS thing. If I go in here and I say, please do AMD, it will now take an output code which is different because we are now targeting AMD. So this is a very powerful tool because you have one truth of TypeScript sources, and then you just compile them twice depending on the platform that you want to go to. This was a very expensive refactoring in our code base because we had 100,000 lines plus code, all intertangled, like this weird dependency graph. That's actually nothing we came up with. It's the truth. Like, we came up with this by programming. It was a very expensive refactoring. Happy developer says, I feel like fresh showered. Everything is self-contained. You stick to these solid principles. There's no more cycles, there's no more globals, you have a clean file structure, so life is very good. If you guys do use, if you guys target a big project, do use external modules. That will make your life a lot easier. You can still use it in a synchronous fashion, But as soon as you have a lot of code and you want to go back, it will make life very hard because it's very prone to screw it over. So now that we have AMD, we can take it to the next level, right? So I mentioned this, like you don't want to load all of your application up front. So there's a fine line. You want to load the bits of the application to make it run easy, like to give the user a good experience. But then like some bits where you anticipate they will be used later at a later time, you want to defer the loading of this. So what we came up with, we always have like these simple registries where you can say, for instance, for this guy, like the C# support is registered itself just on a MIME type and says, hey, if you hit a file with this MIME type, go in and load this module and then just instantiate it. And then the actual module, which you see on the right-hand side, is being loaded on demand and will pull in a lot of code. So to demo this, you can actually see how we did this. So if I go into F12 again, and I want to see the network request. So I'll start recording this guy, and now I press on this search experience. So you can see, like, there's already an icon, and there's, you know, like, there's obviously already an action that will trigger search. But only when I press it, it will actually be loaded. So now we say, oh, I load the search experience, I load the JavaScript file, I also load the CSS file with it, and I load the translation file with it. So, like, all this code, which, you know, like, sums up to be a bit, like, we did not have to load it up front. It will be lazily loaded while you work in your application, which is a very good thing. And I do want to point out that, like, this was just JavaScript, but we also loaded the CSS to it. So AMD is so awesome that you can make dependencies cross languages. So you cannot only say your JavaScript file depends on these other JavaScript files. You can also say my JavaScript file depends on this CSS file. It depends on this text file. And then you can put things together in a very nice way, because if someone doesn't want the search viewlet, he also doesn't want the stylings for it and the icons for it. So that's a very happy experience. So if we keep on going, it's like, yeah, we have the lazy loading, which makes, you know, life a lot easier. We have CSS dependencies. So because CSS is a major pain, because you have these global CSS files, and then, you know, like, you remove a bit of your JavaScript code, you forget to remove the corresponding CSS code. And with this, we have a nice alignment, JavaScript file, CSS file, JavaScript file, CSS file. They get bundled together. If I delete one, I would just delete the other one. And you achieve this with AMD Loader plugin. So there's nothing we came up with. So the AMD specification has this sort of like, you know, like the idea of a loader. And how this looks like, you say, when you define a dependency, you say, please load me the plugin via CSS, and then ask this plugin to load .actionbar. So this will be the CSS file for our action bar. In TypeScript, you have to use this pragma with this AMD dependency. In normal JavaScript, you can just use it normally. This is a very useful tool because you will end up in CSS hell as well. The last good thing where we could, like, you know, like, max out AMD is packaging. As you see, like, we have 800 JavaScript files. You don't want to load 800 JavaScript files because every time you go to the server asking for something, there's a lot of overhead being in, like, included in this. So you want to bundle them together. But it's a conflicting goal. You don't want to bundle everything together. So you want to have nice chunks of your application being carved out so you can load it lazily. Definitely the tool to use there is Ardo.js. Ardo.js is being made by the same guys that propose AMD. They also have required JS as an AMD loader. That is definitely the tool of choice if you use AMD. Very powerful tool. We'll also minify, you know, has an uglify step, you know, like everything that you want. We'll have source maps. This is what you want. Makes debugging easier, makes deployment easier. So this is still like the road to Monaco. We are now like 100,000 lines plus, and now like while we're hitting into the 200,000 line bucket, like you're sort of like seeing what every big project will see, right? Like you cannot pull off a big project, no matter if it's JavaScript, TypeScript, .NET, Java, or whatever, without having, you know, like some components, without having proper API or dependency injection. Like no one will get off this. If you do, please talk to me. You will be a lot smarter than I am. So this is what we started to introduce. I will not talk a lot about this. what's the next thing you see now, like we're at a 100% TypeScript. And the things like, how did we do this? Like, how did this happen? Because we had the guy that does the editor. He was JavaScript hardcore. And he was like, no, we should have rewrite. No, it just makes things slower. I will keep it in JavaScript. And then he had this thing. So the editor has a document, you know, like normal, you know, model views and controllers, what the things you have, view models. And one of his data structures, the document had a field ID. He wanted to make this field a function getID. So what you do, you open your IDE because you have no reference search. I can maybe demo this. You go in here and say like, oh well, I want to search for ID. So you just go in and say, oh, ID, I'll search for this, right? And like ID happens to be a name which is very often chosen and like in programming. Many people like this term. I don't know why search is not working right now. This is sort of like a good role model. So like, even if I say, okay, I only want to have the words and the casing, this is things you can do. You can play a lot of with regular expressions to actually find only ID usages. But if you have to go through all of this list and say like, everything in here could be a reference to the field I just want to change, it would just kill you. So this was the convincing thing. He was like, I'm faster rewriting everything to TypeScript and then run a reference search on it. And he was. And this is like, you know, you guys don't have to go through there. If you start something, just start with TypeScript from the beginning. It will make your life easier. Migration happened out of developer will, which is like, oh, I face a big problem. What solution do I take? I'll rewrite everything to TypeScript. And TypeScript is easy. As I said, it has the dial, so you can just, you know, rename your file to TS, and then it's already TypeScript. What you end up doing is like you're dialing it further up, and then you, like, once you feel the joy of it, you will introduce a lot of interfaces to describe all these option bags and these data packages. And if you do the real thing, if you do it deeply, the velocity is like you do 300 lines of code per hour if you really want to do it deep. Like, this is nothing to scare you off. Like, don't do the math and say, like, ooh, I have 100,000 lines of JavaScript code. It will take me 2 years. This is really if you want to go deep into it. If you just flip the switch and just bring in types as you go, you will be a lot faster. Then we started to like types even more. So we came up with a lot of team-specific rules where we say no implicit anys. That means you always have to put a type annotation. Even if it's any, so you don't want anything to be inferred to any. You have to use return types, like, you know, specify a return type, don't let it be inferred, and write js.com. That's actually not true with the js.com comments. We do it a little bit, but not often. So after all of this, you know, like, even though we had this editor, which was going very well, like, it was already used everywhere, like, after the migration, you know, surprise developer goes in, it's like, dude, I had the same data, which is just looking like it had so many different shapes, even though I was always wanted to express in the cell the same thing. So, like, by introducing these types and, you know, like, using interfaces, you will think about your code better, and you will actually see, oh, I have a type which is very similar to this type. We would just, you know, like, merge them together because it's actually the same thing. So that does make life a lot easier. You will understand your code a lot better, and also will others. So, like, all these teams inside Microsoft that adopt, you know, like, they work with our editor, they never have questions, right? We give them the TypeScript definition and say, like, yeah, this is the interface. Go ahead, play with it. And they barely have questions like, oh, like, what is this data type? They just know it because the source code is self-documenting. So coming to the end, TypeScript retrospective. So, like two things I want you to take home. Use TypeScript as much as possible. Because it will make your life a lot easier. Use external modules. It will make your life a lot easier, especially if you build a large-scale application. You guys are in an awesome position. TypeScript is 1.01 now. It's built into Visual Studio. There's tools for Eclipse, IntelliJ. There's tools for Sublime. There's us with Monaco Visual Studio Online. There's an awesome playground. When we started, all of this was not around. We had already 100,000 lines of code, and then TypeScript changed the syntax for classes. Because the goal of TypeScript is to be very much aligned to the ECMAScript 6, which will be the next version of JavaScript. And it's just like the current TypeScript proposal didn't match what the JavaScript proposal was. And then we're like, OK, we go with ECMAScript 6 anticipated. And that just meant that Monaco had to change a lot of code. Because all of, like, we had many classes, so there was a bit of pain. But even with that, even like, you know, like having, you know, being always on bleeding edge, having a compiler that just runs out of memory or something, like even that, we said, like, okay, this is still bias me so much because I have this confidence. Like, I can go home, I know, like, my code is what my code is supposed to be. It's nothing, like, it doesn't mutate its state just randomly. I can refactor, like, I have a little bit of agility. There's tooling, and, like, yeah, it's a lot more fun. Yeah, the two things take home. Look at TypeScript, look at external modules. That's all you need. So there's related content, which is already from the past, because this is a Wednesday talk. So the Getting Started, which Jonathan did, there's a lot more details about TypeScript. He is showing how to convert a JavaScript application into TypeScript. And this is exactly, he's playing the game with the dial, you know, like add one type annotation, see here a problem, and more. And yeah, use the IE11 tools. They are awesome tools. Yeah, go to TypeScript. Go to resources. We have a channel 9 where we talk a lot about TypeScript and about Monaco Visual Studio Online. And yeah, last but not least, win an Xbox and a gift card. And if you win one, share it with me. You can evaluate the session using this QR code. Yeah, thank you a lot for your attention. If you have questions, feel free to ask. There's a lot more stories to tell. I'll stick around another while, but we also have almost 10 more minutes if you want to ask something. Oh, there's one, sorry.
I'm working with a large project that originally started with jQuery.
Uh-huh.
And I'm with the UI engineers, and one of the things that we're working on is a tremendous amount of JavaScript. It's all in jQuery, and we're taking it out, and we've done some AMD. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we've widgetized a lot of components, so we've taken them and turned them into widgets.
Mm-hmm.
Widgets, all of the JavaScript is buried inside the widgets. I'm wondering if it'd be better to use classes.
You mean it's a lot of in the templates in HTML?
Within the widgets themselves.
Yeah. In general, there's not. The question was: you have a lot of JDojo code and a lot of jQuery code. You have HTML templates, and inside these templates, you write JavaScript code. So, Monaco Visual Studio Online actually does support this. So, if you mix and match, we do understand this is a script tag, and we do offer you full JavaScript service inside these script tags. So, definitely take a look. In general, like our widgets are all just handwritten, so there's almost no templating involved. So we have it very separated, all of this. Yes, yeah, we do separate. Also, like if you use jQuery, there's like even if you want to stick to using JavaScript, you can start calling your JavaScript TypeScript, and you can pull in libraries that have been written for a jQuery. So there's the there's this project which is called Definitely Typed. Let me pull this up. All right, so if you have this, because there will be. This is not the right thing. This will have all the definitions. You just reference this, and you will already have good tooling support. I think I maybe even have a sample for this. I can make you a sample work just right now. But I can also take more questions if there's more things you guys want to know. All right, let's go in here. So there's this thing called TSD, which is the, and I would just install it, query jQuery. Oh, sorry, I took the code away. Huh? Yeah, if you load all your JavaScript up front and all your data models,
yeah, all of it.
Yeah, you will have a lot of data to chew on in the beginning. Yeah, that's a lot. And then, like, the thing is, what we're saying, if you have a splash screen, you're doing something wrong. Like, your application should start, you know, like, a splash screen is like a screen of shame because it means your application is so slow, you have to load another application first that just, like, keeps the user entertained. So this is why we try to delay this a little bit, right? Instead of loading one big chunk, we try to build a little bit of a waterfall. You know, like, we give the user something already, you can start playing.
When it was all in jQuery, it actually ran very fast.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, that's often a, yeah, that's, never underestimate this, yeah. So I do have the jQuery DTS here. And we'll make you a little sample. So there's this tool which you can install with npm, which is called TSD, which basically goes directly against this definitely type repository. And you can just say, yeah, I query for jQuery and I want it to be installed. And now it's here, you can see. Come on, internet. So you see this is like basically all of jQuery. There's a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff is in there. And basically what you do if you have a JavaScript file, well, let me have one. You just say, you do a reference and then you say typings. Let me see if this comes up. The internet is today a little bit slow. I actually have to restart typing. So once you have this, you can already just use TypeScript, jQuery as you go. So you will have, this is actually not the thing what I wanted. You have jQuery, and now you can just go, right? This is what I wanted. So you see, like this, all the jQuery is in there. So all what you need, you know, like just, you know, flip the thing to TS, pull in the strip references, and then you're already good. Yeah, I'll use the dollar, yeah. I don't know why it didn't work. The dollar should be in there. It is in here, so. Yeah. This is a very good DTS file, and there's like hundreds of them. So the community really likes this. So like there's hundreds of DTS files for anything that you want. Yeah, there will be one for Dojo as well, yes.
There's one coming?
No, I think there is one.
All
right, let me check again. Definitely typed. It is on GitHub and oh, there's none. Maybe there's on someone to come. I think I heard something there. That's a good thing. So this is the website where even if you do JavaScript, just you know, bring in some DTS files. Your life is already a lot sweeter. And then you just bring in a few types, and your life is very sweet. Yeah.
And then to keep things modular, I mean, put into modules, and then the widgets themselves make calls.
Yes. I know Dojo had like a different sort of like module system. It was more like CommonJS, but sort of like in the browser. But I think they also, it all goes together into one module definition. Okay, that's good. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's already a few years ago I did Dojo. So. All right. Is there more questions? Sure. Not that I know of. I don't know anything, but the question was, are there any native TypeScript interpreters? You know, like something that you don't have to do this, transpile to JavaScript step. Just a VM where you chuck it in. There's non-existing. I have not heard of any plans, anyone doing it. It would sort of defeat the purpose, right? Because, you know, like the third option, you have a language, you compile it down to JavaScript. Otherwise, you would have to tell everybody, please install the TypeScript VM, that would be a little bit broken because we want this to run just anywhere and everywhere. So question is, do we use JSLint? So like, there's JSHint and JSLint for JavaScript, which is like awesome tools. They already warn you a lot. They do a little bit of inference. They like do a little bit of what TypeScript does. And there is TSHint, which is it is on GitHub. Is it TSHint, TypeScript Lint, TSLint? Oh, there's a tool on GitHub which does exactly this. Oh, it's wrong search. There's TSLint. You run this, it has many checks. It can do basically anything JSON does, and it offers you a lot more because this is TypeScript. TypeScript knows a lot more about your source code, so it can tell you, hey, this variable is never being used. You have a private member that you don't use. You have an import that you don't use. Like all these sweet things this guy will tell you. So definitely a tool to look into. We have something like this in our tool chain. Yeah, good question. So the question is, what about debugging, right? You have TypeScript, and from TypeScript, it generates JavaScript, and obviously it doesn't look the same. So what does TypeScript, what it does, it generates map files. So like, you can tell the compiler, and this is like the default setting, to generate a map file, and browsers understand this map file. And then when they hit a JavaScript file that has a reference on this map file, they're actually able to build up the TypeScript file again. So the debugger will just show a TypeScript. You can step through TypeScript and debug. That works in IE and Chrome and in Visual Studio. I did not prepare a sample for this, I'm sorry. But this is, it's a very smooth experience. For once, the code is not that much different. You get used to it very quickly. But you can use just the TypeScript debugging, which is a good thing. Though you have to make sure that when you minify your code, you have a source map, and then minifiers also have to have a source map. So that's a step. But Uglify.js actually understands this and does take care of this. Yeah, you and then you.
I saw that you mentioned dependency injection on your slide.
Yes.
Was that kind of like library that you used for that, or was that kind of like in-house?
Yeah, the question was, there was on the slide was dependency injection, and I use it as a cliffhanger. I didn't show anything of this. I have a backup slide. The question is this in-house or like a library? And the answer is it is in-house. So we did look around a little bit, and with .NET and Java, you can do these awesome dependency injection libraries. And with JavaScript, this is very hard. So we have an injector thing where we do setter injection, and our principle is very simple. I'll show you a bit of code. We say, where are we? Oops, wrong thing. Hey, oh, this is not what I wanted. Oh, I'm sorry. We have an injector service, and we have many services where you sort of like all define in one place, and. If you go in here, you get this injector service. We just say inject to something. And anybody that wants to use the service has to say, a lot of code. You should not see this. We have this, you implement an interface, which is, for instance, an iThread service consumer. And that forces you to implement a function, inject thread service. And then the injector would just look on your source code. It's like, oh, there's something inject thread service. And then we just call it. That's one way how we do it. We then figured out it's a little bit bulky because you have many, many of these functions, and it's very hard. You never know when injection is done, so we also offer you to call a on injection done call because often injection is sort of like it should only happen at construction of an object and not later. If it happens twice, it's always a messy state. So we also started to do constructor injection, which I can show you later maybe. But it's not as cool as matching on names. First, we had constructor injection, matching on the names. But then, we realized it doesn't work with me finding a source code because all the names are gone. Now what we do, we just provide you guys, like when you were being created, we give you a context object. And in this context object, there's all the services. And only during a constructor call, you have the chance to grab the services from this context object, and then the context object will become void. So this is sort of a fine line of having more denser code and still forcing you to actually declare your dependencies in one place and not keep this context around and then just like poke on services. Yeah. I think you had a question first. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm new to both JavaScript and TypeScript. Mm-hmm. Can you comment on the relationship between TypeScript and ECMAScript?
Yeah, excellent question. So the question is like relationship between ECMAScript 6 and TypeScript. And TypeScript tries to be what ECMAScript 6 will be. So many of the things TypeScript has of today will come in ECMAScript. For instance, classes. So like, we went through all of this, changing the classes, but how classes are defined today will be, that's the proposal for classes in JavaScript. So once that is out, the JavaScript classes and TypeScript classes will be the same. The same is true for Lambda functions. You can do all these tricks in TypeScript. Promises will also come. Yeah, there's still like API, but actually syntax. So, if you have an array, you can do this for each. And what you do today is you say function, and then these things, and then the last guy you can provide this argument. You might say this. What TypeScript already supports today, ECMAScript will support in the future is Lambda functions, which means you write it like this with a fat arrow syntax. And then this will be the proper this as you would expect it. Because I'm pretty sure everybody did this wrong already in his JavaScript life. So to answer the question, TypeScript wants to be ECMAScript 6. Like whatever ECMAScript 6 will decide on, TypeScript will be. Yeah, we hope so. It's not like this. Like I love it, and but the optimal future would be that JavaScript is so good that you can just build tools against JavaScript. It will be still a long way. I don't know what the ECMAScript 6 proposal on type annotations are and all these things. So it will stick around for a while, but it's not for the purpose of having yet another programming language. It's just there to, it's today you want to implement heavy web apps and you have no proper tools for it. So you need this. Yeah. More questions? You had a question. If there's no more questions, I have a red light that keeps blinking here. but I think we have still more time. I will stick around, so if you guys want to... one more question. Huh?
How does it compare and differ from Dart?
Oh, good question. Question is, how does it compare and differ to Dart? There's an awesome video about this. So Lars Bak, who's the guy who works at Google, does Dart, and Anders Heidsberg, who is at Microsoft doing TypeScript. There's a Channel 9 video on this where they talk about this. And to summarize it, the mission of TypeScript is to make engineering nicer. It's an engineering tool. It helps to build awesome tools that make you a more productive programmer. That's the mission of TypeScript. The mission of Dart is to make program execution faster. So V8 sort of hit the limits. You cannot get faster than V8. And now they need something more. So you come up with a better programming language that just allows for further optimization. That is sort of different agendas they have. But I really recommend watching that video. It's very entertaining. It is has a lot of good content. Do we have the time? There was one more question, and then we just do it one-on-one. Because I will be at the booth. I think in 15 minutes or 30, in an hour. Let me check my schedule.
I was just going to ask if AMD,
when compiler, so the question was, is AMD or CommonJS this requirement when you want to work with TypeScript? TypeScript is actually just the source transformation tool when it comes to transforming TypeScript into JavaScript. When you want to use it, you need to download this library, but you just go require JS and then you just download this one library and then things just work. Very simple.
Which is your favorite CommonJS or AMD?
Personal preference, CommonJS, AMD? Very hard question, will not answer that. The thing is, technically, AMD makes more sense, especially in the context of a browser. It is more right, but AMD is winning. No, CommonJS is winning. Sorry, yeah. Because there's the huge community around Node.js, and people now start pushing client-side library into this NPM package manager. And there's like this the project called Bower, which like takes CommonJS libraries and just bundles them together. And their statement is like, yeah, you load pictures that are 5 megabytes, so why bother about code which is 7 megabytes, right? Yeah, it is so like, it's something you should monitor. But the beauty of TypeScript is it doesn't matter, right? You can always flip the bit, and then your project is AMD or CommonJS. Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, I will be at the booth at around 11, down in the expo area. Thank you a lot. Thank you. Thank you, guys.